This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. We've got another hour of fine old-time radio this week for you on the Relic Radio Show. We're going to start off this week with a request for a Mysterious Traveler episode titled SOS, first aired May 2nd, 1950. Then it's a quick Believe It or Not and Consider It Uncle. We'll finish off with two episodes from The Unexpected, a series we haven't heard from in quite some time, and I doubled up on them because they're short. We'll hear Legacy from June 27th, 1948. That will be followed with Rematch from August 15th, 1948. But first, here's The Mysterious Traveler.
The Mutual Broadcasting System presents The Mysterious Traveler, written, produced, and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Cogan, and starring tonight three of radio's foremost personalities, Ralph Bell, Louis Van Rooten, and Roger DeCoven in S.O.S.
This is the Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as we join three enterprising men who are in a very dire predicament. It's a story I call S.O.S. My story tonight is about a group of unsavory individuals at the moment discussing a little unhappily their recent past.
Yes, sir. Here we are, the three of us, adrift out here. How long is it now? How long, Mike?
Let me alone. Ask Steve. He knows everything.
Yeah, he sure does. Couldn't miss, he said. Couldn't miss. Still opportunities. You just have to recognize them. Isn't that what you said, Steve? Huh? Isn't that what you say?
Shut up, Doc. Shut up. I've had enough of you.
Look at him. Now he's going to turn on that automatic radio sender. Isn't that right, Steve?
Shut up. Shut up.
Do you really think someone's going to hear those signals?
No, sir. We're adrift out here, but for good. You're wasting your time with that radio sender. No one's going to pick us up.
Right, Mike?
Stop bothering me. Let me alone.
Yes. I can remember that day, Steve, when you first spilled the plan to us.
Oh, you were the mastermind, all right.
Remember, Steve, huh?
Yeah, I remember all right. I wish I could forget that day. Forget everything that happened. But there's no escaping it. I can see everything that happened as clear as if it were only yesterday. Yeah. I remember the way I walked into the office. Mike and Doc were sitting there, waiting. Waiting for the bad news.
Well?
Farson got a life sentence. The rest got 10 to 20 years.
Great. Just great.
I just can't get over it. Just can't. Things were running so smoothly. The syndicate was cleaning up, and then this happens.
The three of us were pretty lucky. Not being indicted with the others?
Yeah. If we hadn't been in South America,
hand on that end. We'd have gotten it in the neck, too.
I still do not understand. How could they smash the syndicate overnight? There were no records. Farson took every precaution.
Let's face it. The day for guys like us is over. The cops have science on their side. They're using every trick in the book.
Yeah, you're right.
Television, radar, infrared cameras, electro detectors, light beam alarms, and 101 other scientific gimmicks.
Yes, you are right. They have learned to move so fast that they have taken all the profit out of the rackets.
They sure have. I just wish I had a small part of all that dough I once made. Where did it go? Lawyers, bail, protection. I haven't got a cent left.
Neither have I. What about you, Steve?
I've still got a few grand left.
Well, the way science is turning the heat on, it looks like we'll have to turn honest, whether we want to or not.
Look, I've been working on an angle. What about sticking around for a couple of more days?
Get wise, Steve. The cops are ready for everything these days. There aren't any more angles.
I tell you, I've got one. I just need a little more time to work it out. What do you say?
Well, it cannot do any harm to listen.
How much time do you need?
2 days. Meet me here the day after tomorrow. I'll lay out the whole plan for you.
Well, Steve, you still got an angle? Or did it blow up in your face?
For the past 48 hours, I've been going over it, detail by detail. And it still looks good.
Well, what is the job? Let's have it.
The lifting of $5 million worth of uncut Martino diamonds from the SS Europe.
What? You must be out of your head. It would require an army to take over that boat. It has a crew of over 300.
This plan of mine can be worked with 3 men. Us.
This I've got to hear. Just how would you go about it, mastermind?
All right. 2 weeks from tonight, the SS Europe will be docking in London with 5 million in uncut diamonds and a shipment of 3,000 pounds of uranium under pressure.
3,000 pounds of uranium under pressure?
What are you getting at?
A half hour before the Europe lands, I go to the captain's quarters. You, Mike, you go to the radio communication office. And you, Doc, you go to the special room where the uranium is stored under pressure.
Then what?
I tell the captain that I have one man in control of radio communication and another in the uranium storage room. And unless he turns over the diamond shipment to me, a bullet will be fired into the uranium compressor, blowing up the ship.
You really expect the captain to fall for that? Why, he'll call your bluff. Dare you to blow up the ship with us on it.
Of course he will. A threat like that would never work.
You're wrong. You're wrong there. Psychologically, we've got the edge of the captain. Maybe we're willing to die, too. With a crew of 300 and twice as many passengers, he just wouldn't risk it.
Perhaps you're right. After all, his first duty is to his passengers and ship. He would probably figure that we wouldn't get far with those diamonds. That the police would get us in no time at all.
Of course. That's exactly the way he'd see it.
Suppose you do force him to turn over the diamonds. How would we make our getaway?
We'd use one of the ship's emergency launchers.
Sure. Meanwhile, the captain of the SS Europe has radioed the police. And we walk right into their eyes.
The captain won't radio the police.
No, and why won't he?
For 2 reasons. First, this radio room will be put out of commission. And second, 10 minutes after we leave the Europe, it's going to blow up.
Blow up? The uranium?
That's right. There won't be a piece of the ship left or anyone to identify it.
$5 million in uncut diamonds, you say, huh?
At least $5 million.
This plan of yours, Steve, is just wild enough to succeed. Yes, through sheer audacity, it might be carried off.
A job like that, it's all in it.
That's right. Well, what do you say, Doc?
Finding the thought of honest labor abhorrent, I'm inclined to go along with you, Steve.
What about you, Mike?
The odds are against us.
But for that kind of dough, I'll risk it.
You won't regret it, Mike. All right, now here's the setup. The day after tomorrow, the SS America is outward bound. We'll be on her when it leaves.
You mean so that we can study the same layout that we'll find on the yacht?
Yes, that's right. By the time we board the Europe for the return trip, we'll know every inch of the ship. Now, we'll have to work fast. I'll take care of getting us passports under assumed names. Doc, I want you to book passage for the three of us on the America. Mike, you take care. Two days later, Doc, Mike, and myself boarded the SS America using false passports. We pushed our way through the other passengers, mostly vacationists, to our cabin on B deck. While we were unpacking, the ship's whistle blew for all visitors to leave. A few minutes later, we were on our way. During the next 3 days, we covered the ship from one end to the other, taking pictures of the layout, learning the schedules of the crew. When we walked off after the 10-day trip, we knew everything there was to know about both liners.
Passengers will kindly step this way and show their passport.
Come on, that's us.
Hope we don't have any trouble with these passports.
Stop worrying, will you?
May I see your passport, please?
Here you are.
Thank you. Richard Werby, born in Boston, United States. How long do you intend to stay here, Mr. Werby?
About a week.
Have you ever been here before?
No, this is my first visit.
Our laws are quite different than those of your country. You will do well to study this booklet, which is issued by my government.
Thank you, I will.
Your passport is stamped. You may pass.
Thank you.
I trust you enjoy your stay with us. Next passenger.
My feet hurt. Why don't we go back to the hotel?
We might as well see the local sights while we're here.
So this is what all our fellow passengers came all this way to see.
Oh, this place gives me the creeps. The natives, too. Everything looks so different.
Oh, come on now. Mike, that's no way for a traveler to speak. Sure, this place is different from what you've known. But you find plenty to interest you here.
Yeah. Just as soon be back in New York, it's all the same to you.
Relax, Mike. Another week and you'll be back in New York.
Relax, he says. I don't like places that are different. I like what I'm used to. This crazy bird. What do they call them anyway?
I don't know. You, Steve?
They're the national bird. Called Martinos.
Martinos. Yeah, look at them. Like vultures. Thousands of them.
Oh, you'll get used to them.
And all these canals. Never seen nothing like it.
That's one of the great attractions here. People come from all over the earth to see these canals.
Yeah, well, they can have them.
Look at those ruins over there. War's been over all these years, and yet they've never cleaned them up, rebuilt.
Yeah, our rocket fighters sure leveled the countryside.
No wonder the natives aren't any too friendly, huh?
You say that again. I'll be glad when we board the Europe, leave this place forever.
Did you check all our luggage?
Yes, I went through the motions of looking like an anxious tourist. It'll be in our cabin when we go aboard.
What cabin did we get, Steve?
Cabin 32B.
32B? That's just a few feet away from the radio communications office.
That's right.
Attention, please. Attention, please. All passengers bound for London will now board the SS Europe. Departure time is 0900. All passengers for London will please board the SS Europe.
Come on, that's us. We followed the returning vacationists aboard, had our passports checked, and were shown to our cabin. It would be 10 days before we'd go into action, but already the three of us felt that sense of excitement that comes before a big job. And this would be a big job. The biggest ever. The minutes and the hours seemed to drag on that homeward trip. We checked the craft from stem to stern, and the layout was exactly like that of the SS America. On the final night out, all the passengers were celebrating. None of them expecting that they'd never see London. At 4 a.m., with the liner just 1 hour from London, three of us went over our plans for the last time. The interminable roar of the motors in our ears. Okay, this is it. You both have your guns.
Yes, of course.
Now, Mike, you'll take over radio communications. There'll be just one radio operator on duty. Remember now, take them quietly.
You won't let out a peep.
Good. It shouldn't take you more than a few minutes to put the radio and radar equipment out of commission. Now, make sure you don't damage the ship's intercommunication system.
Just leave it to me.
Now, Doc, there's one crew member guarding the storage room where the uranium shipment is being kept. Once you've taken care of him, lock yourself in the storage room. Now, you don't come out until I give the signal.
I understand.
Now, have you got the demolition stick?
It's right here.
Good, good.
I understand.
Now, have you got the demolition stick?
It's right here.
Good, good. I've explained how it works. When I rap on the storage room door, you plant the demolition stick under the uranium compressor, where they won't be able to see it.
Right.
We'll have to move fast now. That explosive will go off 10 minutes after it's set.
Will we be able to get far enough away before the explosion?
Oh, yes. The launch is on B deck, right outside the storage room. We'll be in the launch and away in a matter of seconds.
Doc, you've already checked the launch, haven't you?
Yes, I just came from it. It's all set to go.
All right. That takes care of everything. Now, let's set our watches. I've got 4:26, 45 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
50 seconds. 55 seconds. 4:27.
Right, check.
Okay. Let's go. The three of us left the cabin and separated on the deserted and dimly lit deck. I walked to the nearest staircase and went up to A deck. There wasn't a soul in sight as I walked to the captain's quarters. It was exactly 4:29 a.m. I lit a cigarette, waiting. On the horizon, far ahead, I could see the lights of London. I could feel the liner losing speed. At exactly 4:30, I knocked on the captain's door.
Come in, come in. Oh, come in, Phillips. Are you ready? I thought it was Phillips, my first officer.
No, Captain. I'm merely one of your passengers.
I'm afraid you'll have to excuse me. I'm due in the control room. We'd be landing.
You'll have to hear me out first,
but I've
Captain.
Just told you. God! What's the meaning of this?
Sit down, Captain.
Now, see here.
Sit down. That's better.
Then what is it?
You're carrying $5 million in uncut Martino diamonds. I want them.
You must be out of your mind.
I'm not alone in this, Captain. At the moment, this ship is at my mercy.
It's your mercy?
Yes. My men have taken over key positions on this ship.
Right. I don't believe you. That isn't possible.
No? Well, just as a test, pick up the phone and dial the radio communications office. Go ahead.
Radio communications office.
Who is this?
It ain't one of your crew members, Captain.
Let me have the phone. Hello, Mike.
Yeah?
Everything under control?
Couldn't be better.
Good. I'll be talking to you. Maybe now you're beginning to realize that I'm not out of my head, Captain.
You must be. Do you believe you can commit piracy and get away with it?
I'll get away with it, Captain, because you see, you're going to help me.
I help you?
Yes, that's right. One of my men has taken over the storage room where the uranium is stored under pressure.
You can't do that. Why, that pressure machine calls for constant care of an engineer. If the pressure falls below a certain point, the uranium will explode. Well,
take it easy. Take it easy. That pressure machine is being looked after by one of my men. Nothing will happen to it. That is, if you do exactly as I say. You think I'm bluffing? You think I'm bluffing about the storage room?
Storage room?
Everything under control, Doug?
Yes.
The captain's here by the phone. Tell him what your orders are.
I am to put a bullet in the pressure machine if I don't hear from you in 15 minutes.
You heard what he said. Well?
He's bluffing. If he put a bullet in the pressure machine, uranium would blow us all up. You and your men included.
That's right. But you see, Captain, my men and I have nothing to lose. And you and the rest do.
What do you mean?
The authorities in London are waiting to arrest us. Murder. So, as I said, we have nothing to lose if we're forced to blow up the ship.
Even if I turned the diamonds over to you, how would you get away?
We take the launch on B-Deck.
I see.
You've got 13 minutes left, Captain, before my man fires that bullet. And believe me, he will.
Seems I haven't any choice.
None.
The authorities will get you for this.
Let me worry about that. You've got 12 minutes left. Now you're being sensible.
First Officer Phillips speaking.
Phillips, this is Captain Andrews.
Yes, sir.
I want you to go to the purser, have him turn over to you the consignment of uncut diamonds we're carrying. Bring them to my cabin.
Sir, we'll be landing in less than...
That's an order, Phillips.
Yes, sir.
He should be here with the diamonds in a matter of minutes.
For your sake, I hope so, Captain. I hope so.
That must be Phillips now.
Have him come in.
Come in.
I have the diamonds here, sir.
Turn them over to this man.
But, sir...
As I say, the safety of the ship and our passengers are at stake.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. You don't mind if I look them over?
What's this all about, sir?
Seems that after many centuries, piracy has returned.
Piracy, sir?
Yes. All right, I've checked them. Now, Captain, if you and your first officer will escort me to B-Deck.
Very well. Come along, Phillips.
Yes, sir.
After you, gentlemen, our first stop will be the radio communications office. Here we are. Come on out on deck, Mike.
Everything all right?
Yes, stuff's in the box. All right, Captain, the next stop is the special storage room.
Very well.
Did you take care of the communications office, Mike?
Yeah, they won't be sending out any messages.
Good. Well, here we are, Captain. Doc? Doc?
Why don't he answer?
Now the door's locked. Open up, Doc. It's us.
Dave, something's wrong.
Yeah.
Look. Let's take the launch and blow out of here. It isn't our fault something happened to Doc.
You're forgetting one thing. We need Doc. He's the only one of us who knows how to navigate that launch.
Yeah. Come on, let's break down the door. Together now. Scum it. What's more? That does it.
Sir, shall I try to slip away and sound the alarm?
It won't be necessary, Phillips.
There's Doc lying on the floor in there. He's out cold.
Let's get him out.
Well, the air in here... I can't breathe. The place is full of gas. Better get out of here before we pass out. That gas must have gotten dark.
Phillips.
Yes, sir?
Disarm these two men. Have the third one on our guard taken out of the storage room when the gas disperses.
Very good, sir.
I see, Phillips, you've revived the third man, eh?
Yes, sir. The three of them are all conscious again.
And the guard?
He's all right, too, sir. We found this, sir, in the third man's pocket.
Demolition stick.
As I see it, they were going to set it before they left the ship, sir.
Blow up my ships and passengers, would they?
Shall I put them in the brig, sir?
Brig? No, Phillips. I'm not taking them into London. I'm dealing with them here. Now.
Well, I don't understand, sir.
This launch they were going to take. Have it filled with concentrated food and water. Enough to last them for years.
Very good, sir.
Then I want the launch's motor completely demolished. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
What? What are you going to do with us?
You've attempted a crime unheard of for centuries. Piracy. I'm going to mete out the old punishment for it. I'm setting the three of you adrift.
Adrift out here? No. No, you can't.
You've got to take us into London. You got it.
They're right, sir. Your duty to turn them over to the police. You haven't the authority to...
Mr. Phillips, out here I'm the law. You carry out my orders to the letter.
Yes, sir.
Captain, give us a break, will you? Don't set us adrift.
It will be murder. That's what it will be. Murder.
Can't set us adrift out there. You can't.
I can and I will. You earned it.
How long have we been adrift out here? 2 months? 3? I guess I lost track. A long way back. Out here, with nothing but the sky to look at. Black, empty sky, blazing with stars. Time loses all meaning. The automatic radio senders keep transmitting signals, but no one listens. No one listens.
Yes, sir, Steve. Couldn't miss, could it? He couldn't miss, huh? You had everything covered, all right. All you missed was that automatic gas alarm they had in the storage room.
Shut up, Doc. Shut up.
Yes, sir. When that guard failed to check in, I got a good dose of that gas. Just a small detail you overlooked.
Shut up.
You think because you're sending out those signals, someone is going to pick us up, huh?
They've got to pick us up. They've got to.
You fool. We are drifting further from the Earth all the time.
But they can't leave us drifting in space in this rocket launch. They can't.
No? Why not? We are 100 million miles out and going further. And has anyone come after us yet?
The Space Patrol. They'll rescue us, I tell you, they will.
Never. They're letting us be examples to anyone else who tries to hijack a space liner. We're drifting out here in empty space for months. We'll drift onward to the day we die.
No, we won't. We'll be picked up, I tell you.
Yes. Why don't you get wise to yourself? This is the year 2185. Miracles don't happen anymore.
This is a mysterious traveler again. Did you enjoy our trip into the year 2185? It seems that criminals of the future aren't going to have any future. Not with science did it against them. Poor Steve, Mike, and Doc. Imagine being adrift in space in a disabled rocket launch and being completely ignored. Yes, it seems that not only doesn't crime pay today, but it's going to pay even less in the year 2185.
Oh, but that reminds me of my story for next week, The Big Dive. It's about a young man who figured out a perfect alibi for murder when he forgot to take into account that if...
Oh, you have to get off here. I'm sorry.
But I'm sure we'll meet again. I take this same train every week at this same time.
You have just heard The Mysterious Traveler, which is played by Maurice Tartlett. In the cast were Ralph Bell, Louis Van Ruten, and Roger DeColvin. Original music is composed and played by Al Finelli. All characters in tonight's story were fictitious, and any resemblance to the names of actual persons was purely coincidental. Frank Waldecker speaking. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Truth is stranger than fiction. And this is the proof. This is Ripley's. Believe it or not.
George Washington, during his entire two terms as President of the United States, refused to shake hands. He always bowed in the belief that a handshake was beneath the dignity of a president. Believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you about the most considerate uncle. Richard Dawson of Bradley, England, was probably the most considerate uncle in history. He was a very large man, so on his deathbed he worried that his 300-pound body would be an inconvenience to his frail nephew after he died. So, to spare his nephew the trouble, Dawson walked out to the garden where he dug his own grave. After he had finished digging, he laid down in the grave and he died. Believe it or not.
From Hollywood, Loreen Tuttle in
The Unexpected.
The Unexpected.
The Unexpected. Life is filled with the unexpected, romantic, tragic, and mysterious endings to our most ordinary actions. Dreams come true, or dreams are shattered by sudden twists of fate in The Unexpected. But first, a word from your announcer. Loreen Tuttle, outstanding radio and screen star in Legacy, a drama of the unexpected.
How would you feel if it happened to you? Oh, sure, you can sit there now and say that I was crazy, that I didn't have a chance. But put yourself in my place. Go ahead, try it for a little while. You're a blonde, not too bad looking, with good legs and enough of a figure to make an 1895 dress look like 50 bucks. You're working a dreamland, going round and round like a horse on a carousel, getting nice fat blisters on top of the nice fat blisters that used to be your feet. You provide smiles, conversation, occasional brush-offs, and amusement for a new guy every 5 minutes. And it only costs him 10 cents. That's it. Just 10 cents. Then one rumba, the long, lanky character you're dancing with, lifts a 7-pound boot off your instep, leans down, and purrs in your ear.
Baby, how'd you like to make $10 million?
How much?
10 million.
Only 10? There was a guy last week who offered me 20.
But I mean it.
So did he, last week.
Okay, baby, so you like being poor. Goodbye.
Hey, wait a minute.
Sorry, Miss Canfield. Dancing with you costs money, remember?
How'd you find out my name?
Somebody mentioned it.
Yeah?
Yeah. That's why I danced with you.
Because of my name?
Among other things.
My partners usually ask for encores.
I only bought one ticket.
You weren't very optimistic.
No. I thought that's all it would take.
You were wrong.
So I was wrong. I've been turned down before. I'll get over it.
Okay, Buster, so long. You got a different line anyway. You're a big-hearted millionaire in disguise who has a weak spot for taxi dancers.
Not exactly. I'm a chauffeur for a small-hearted millionaire who never heard of taxi dancers.
Oh, he's missed a lot.
Yeah, quite a bit. I'd like to have him meet one sometime.
Me?
You.
Maybe we should dance again.
No more tickets.
Oh, I've got an extra one. I keep it for emergencies.
Isn't that against the rule?
I break lots of rules, Buster.
You're a bad girl.
Do we dance?
We can try.
All right, Buster, what's the score?
Touchdown. She'll carry the ball.
Do you call the signals?
Right.
Well?
Let's go out on the terrace. I want to give you the rules.
I figured he was just another wolf with a slightly new approach. But at least I could stop dancing for a few minutes. Besides, he was tall and interesting looking in a sunburned sort of way. Well, what would you have done? I did just that and smiled as I took his arm and walked out to the terrace.
Is your name really Irene Canfield?
Why not?
Any relation to J. Frederick Canfield?
The millionaire?
Mm-hmm.
No relation.
How'd you like to be his niece?
How would he like it?
He wouldn't know the difference.
What have I got to lose?
10 million bucks if it doesn't work? And your good name?
Oh, I wouldn't want to lose the 10 million. What's the pitch?
Old man Canfield's dying.
I read it in the papers.
And there's nobody to collect when he passes on.
Nobody?
Except a niece, Marietta Canfield. But she's disappeared. Nobody's heard of her since the war began. She was caught in Europe and then no letters, no telegrams, no nothing.
Well, maybe she'll turn up.
That's a chance we take.
What did she look like?
Well, the old man hasn't seen her for over 15 years. The war could have changed her. Anyway, you'll do.
Why'd you pick me?
Hunch. Same name, same looks. Just a hunch.
What's in it for you?
I figure you'll be a generous heiress.
How generous?
Very.
Oh, but it couldn't work, Buster.
The name's Rex.
It couldn't work.
Probably not.
There isn't a chance.
Too much risk.
They'd find me out.
Before you started. Well?
When do we begin? Well, after all, a girl has to take some chances if she's going to get ahead in the world. You know what I mean. The next morning, Rex and I had a long huddle and then called our signals for the first play. I drew my savings out of the toe of a snag nylon and blew the whole thing on a couple of broad-shouldered, slim-waisted, simple, and very expensive gowns. Meanwhile, Rex got hold of a friend in New York who wired the joyful news of my impending arrival to the Canfield Menage. Then, properly equipped, I strolled casually through the back door of the local airport carrying a suitcase covered with Paris labels and was met at the front door by Rex. In a matter of minutes, we were on our way in a long black limousine.
All set, baby?
I guess so.
That's going to be a cinch.
Maybe.
Sure. Telegram did it.
What'd the old man say?
Not a word. He's too sick to talk.
And the others?
There aren't any others. None of the servants knew dear Marietta.
Oh, gee, honey, I'm scared.
Be scared, baby. They'll all think it's grief. Well, here we are. Welcome home, Miss Marietta Canfield.
How do you do, Miss Canfield?
How do you do?
I'm Mr. Canfield's butler.
Of course.
May I show you to your room?
Thank you.
Unless you'd prefer to see your uncle first.
Well, is he... I mean, should I...
After all, that's why you're here, isn't it?
Well, I'm afraid I'd better...
Very well. Follow me, please. I'll take you right to Mr. Canfield.
A little scream forming down in the pit of my stomach. It was too risky. The old man was still alive. He'd picked me for a phony at first glance. My mind rushed out of that vaulted hallway into the sleek limousine and back to my nice, noisy, peaceful dance hall. I wanted to run away, but my feet walked up the curving marble staircase and followed Hubert's frock-coated back into a tiny, undersized room. There, in an oversized bed, lay my new uncle, J. Frederick Canfield.
Miss Marriott is here, Mr. Canfield. I knew you'd want to see her immediately.
Hello, Uncle Fred. The skeleton-like figure on the bed moved one long nail claw with great effort. He was trying to say something, but he couldn't quite make the grade. So he just turned his head in my direction, slowly, as if he had to get out and push. He smiled at me, his eyebrows coming together and his gray lips turning up at the corners. And then I saw that it wasn't a smile at all. It was an evil grin. I'll leave now, Uncle Fred. I don't want to tire you, but we'll have a long talk about old times as soon as you're better, huh? Good night, Uncle Fred. Have a good sleep. And he did. He had a very good sleep, because the next morning the butler rapped on my door, opened it, and walked in wearing a face that looked as if it had been tied in black ribbons.
Sorry to awaken you, Miss Canfield, but I have some very bad news. Very unpleasant.
Yeah?
Your uncle died last night.
For the next couple of days, I was plenty scared. But when no relatives turned up for the funeral, it looked like Rex and I had really pulled it off. Of course, we couldn't be sure until after Mr. Smithson had read the will. But we weren't worried.
And to each of my faithful servants who are in my employ at the time of my death, I bequeathed $10,000. The remainder of my estate to be delivered to my niece, Marietta Canfield, at her request. pardon me for digressing, Miss Canfield, but that should amount to something in the neighborhood of $9 million. Did you hear what I said, Miss Canfield?
Yeah, I heard you, Mr. Smithson. You said I was going to inherit something in the neighborhood of $9 million.
You think the story is over, don't you? But wait. Fate takes a hand. Wait for the unexpected. For the surprising conclusion of Legacy, starring Miss Loreen Tuttle, a Hamilton Whitney production written by Robert Lippitt and Frank Burt and directed by Frank K. Danzig.
As Mr. Smithson continued reading the will, Rex moved behind my chair and I felt his fingers grip my shoulder hard. I smiled up at him. A $9 million smile.
Now, there's just one thing, Miss Canfield, before I go on.
Yeah?
You didn't get here until after your uncle's death, did you?
No, the night before. He was very much alive. He smiled at me and nodded.
Are you sure?
Well, of course. Mr. Canfield's butler was there. He'll back me up.
Oh. Well, then I'm obliged to read an amendment which your uncle fixed to this testament. let me see. Oh, here. In view of the fact that my niece, Marietta, has seen fit to disobey my wishes at every opportunity, it is my desire that I never see her again. And in the event that she disobeys this final command and appears before me at any time during my life, the bequest to her is canceled. The money is to be paid to the municipal hospital. Signed and witnessed, J. Frederick Canfield.
I'm back at Dreamland. As bad as ever. Maybe worse. But I don't suppose I'd have known what to do with $9 million anyway. Would you?
Legacy starred Miss Loreen Tuttle. Listen soon for another of your favorite motion picture stars in a drama of The Unexpected. From Hollywood, Jackie Cooper in The Unexpected.
The Unexpected.
The Unexpected. Life is filled with the unexpected, romantic, tragic, and mysterious endings to our most ordinary actions. Dreams come true, or dreams are shattered by sudden twists of fate in The Unexpected. But first, a word from your announcer. Jackie Cooper, famous motion picture and stage star in Rematch, a drama of The Unexpected.
Yeah, I should look familiar to you. My face has been in the papers plenty of times, on the sport page and on the front pages, too. I'm Freddie Michaels, the Muskogee Kid, the next lightweight champ of the world. Or rather, I was. And I was news, mister. Big news. You might as well hear the story from the beginning, because the papers haven't got it straight about me or the fight, or about Gloria either. She wasn't like they say. She was sweet and little and had big childlike blue eyes. I always had to be careful with Gloria for fear I'd crush her. I got strong arms, real strong.
Oh, Freddie, don't. You're hurting me.
Oh, gee, honey, I'm sorry. I guess I don't know my own strength.
Well, you might save a little of it for the fights. And maybe you'd win more often.
Look, Gloria, I got a good record. I've only been whipped twice.
Yeah, but you haven't fought anybody important. Just a bunch of little bouts. You can't make money that way.
Do we always have to talk about money?
Well, some people think it's important, especially when they want to get married.
Okay, then I guess I'll have to give you the big news.
Oh, Freddie, what news? Oh, come on, honey, tell me.
Well, I was talking to my manager this AM. He's got something big all set up for me. The papers are ready to sign right now. I'm going to get a crack at the title.
When, Freddie, when?
Early this fall.
Oh, how wonderful. I'm so happy. And you're going to be the champ, Freddie. You're going to be the champ.
Yeah. I was going to be the champ, have a lot of dough, a big car, make Gloria very happy. But it didn't turn out to be that simple. No, not with Nick, a guy who liked to bet on sure things, muscling in.
Take it easy, kid. Don't wear yourself out.
Hiya, Nick. What are you doing around here?
Just a friendly visit. Just friendly. I like to watch you boys work out. Sometimes a guy can pick up a tip on how their fight's going to go. If he keeps his eyes open.
This fight will go my way.
Donovan doesn't think so.
Donovan won't last five rounds.
No, I don't know. Maybe you won't.
Get yourself a ringside seat, Nick. I'll knock him right in your lap.
I wouldn't bet on it. Then I only bet sure things. Come on in the dressing room, kid. I want to talk to you.
Well, I don't think we got anything to talk about, Nick. I told you I was going to win.
Yeah, you told me. But I'm not convinced. This fight's worth a lot to you, isn't it, kid? Maybe 5 or 10 G's. If you're lucky and don't get whipped. That kind of money don't go too far these days. Suppose you take it easy for the next few weeks and make 20 G's, huh?
You mean throw the fight?
I mean, take it real easy when you come up to Donovan. And let him do all the work.
Listen, Nick. I never thrown a fight yet. I ain't going to start now. I should have turned him down right then and there, reported him to the boxing commission and kept my gloves clean. But I was scared. Nick was a tough guy with a bad reputation. And $20,000 was a lot of dough.
$20,000? Oh, gee, Freddie, what did you say? What'd you tell him?
Well, I haven't given him an answer yet, but I'm not going to take it, Gloria. You don't think I'd take a bribe? I'll get plenty for winning a fight.
Yeah, if you win it.
What do you mean, honey? Don't you believe in me?
Oh, sure, I believe in you, all right. But like you say, there's no sure thing in prize fighting. Anybody can get beat. Besides, Freddie, I'm thinking about you.
About me? No, I can take care of myself.
Oh, sure you can, Freddie. But Donovan can take care of himself, too. And all the guys with beat-up faces and cauliflower ears, they thought they could take care of themselves, too. But it didn't work out the way they planned.
Well, what do you want me to do, Winnie?
Well, that's up to you, Freddie. Entirely up to you. Maybe with $20,000, we could settle down somewhere. Get a little farm and raise some chickens. But it's your business, Freddie. I don't want to influence your decision.
I knew it was risky. If the boxing commission ever got tipped that I was going to take a dive, I'd be finished for life. But Nick was smart and had plenty of protection, and he paid off in advance.
Oh, gee, Freddie, $20,000, isn't it wonderful? Now we can get that car I saw yesterday, and you know what? I've never had a fur coat, Freddie. Not real fur. Oh, I wouldn't want mink or anything like that. But maybe I could get a fox or a Persian lamb. Something not too expensive.
Sure, sure, honey. You can have anything you want. For the next couple of weeks, we had a wonderful time, Gloria and I. But when the day of the fight rolled around, there wasn't too much dough left. I was beginning to get a little worried. It isn't easy to throw a fight, make it look good enough to convince the boxing commission.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, the radio audience, that's the first round. So far, the boys have been feeling each other out. You know, Freddie Michaels doesn't seem to be up to his usual smashing form with tonight, but perhaps he's holding back, waiting for his opportunity, waiting for that single instant when he'll be able to cut loose with his murderous right. There's the bell, round two.
You know, it's funny, but I never thought it would be so hard to lose a fight. Donovan was old and tired and out of shape. He hadn't landed a decent punch, and I'd let my guard down a dozen times. What did he expect me to do? Go in there and knock myself out? Or fall flat on my face whenever he danced by?
There's Freddie again. He lands a neat left. Donovan hits the canvas.
I kept saying over and over, get up. Get up, you fool. I didn't mean to hit you so hard. I just wanted to make it look real. Get up.
5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Donovan pulls himself to his feet. Now he's a changed man. He's swinging wildly. He lands a haymaker against Freddie's stomach and a left to his chin and right to his jaw. The kid's going down.
Gloria had slapped me harder than that on our first date. But I closed my eyes, keeled over, and tried to look very unconscious.
Ladies and gentlemen, the winner and still champion, Chuck Donovan.
For the next couple of days, I laid low. The newspapers said I'd been badly injured in the fight, but there wasn't any talk about a fix, so I figured I got away with it. For some reason, though, Gloria hadn't come around. I was beginning to get a little worried. So one evening, I went over to her place. Just for a nice talk. At least I thought it was going to be nice.
I'm sorry, Freddie. I didn't know you were coming by or I wouldn't have made another date.
Another date?
Well, sure. You don't expect me to sit around here waiting for you, do you? You haven't even bothered to call since the fight.
Well, gee, honey, you know I couldn't. I had to keep undercover.
Oh, I suppose so. But, Freddie, I don't think it was right for you to throw that fight.
What?
Well, it seemed like a good idea at the time, I guess. But well, now the money's almost all gone, and it's not going to be so easy for you to get any more matches.
No, I suppose not.
So, all in all, it looks to me like you made a mistake.
Gloria was right. I kept thinking how I'd let down all the guys who'd rooted for me and worked for me and counted on my winning the title. There was only some way to make up for it. Then I had an idea. Why not get a rematch with Donovan? Sure. Fight Donovan again. And this time it'd be on the square. No matter what, he'd get the licking he deserved.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're broadcasting the main event of the evening now, a 15-round rematch between fighting Chuck Donovan and the challenger, Freddie Michaels, for the lightweight championship of the world.
This fight was mine, every second of every round. I was gonna be champ. It was a cinch. It was all sewed up. This was the round. But then I heard that voice at the ringside.
Here's Donovan, you won, not the bummer. End it, Donovan, knock him out.
I couldn't believe my ears. Gloria was yelling for the champ. It was Gloria, I was sure. But I had to look before I could be certain. I had to look.
Dropped his guard. The champ swung in and the kid's down. It looks like, ladies and gentlemen, it's a knockout. And Donovan retains the crown.
You think the story is over, don't you? But wait. Fate takes a hand. Wait for the unexpected. For the surprising conclusion of Rematch, a Hamilton Whitney production starring Jackie Cooper, written by Robert Libet and Frank Burt, and directed by Frank K. Danzig.
So I got knocked out. When I looked for Gloria, Donovan smashed her right to my chin and I went down for the count. But at least it was honest. I'd tried and lost. At least I'd made up for the dive I'd taken the first time we fought. I could live with myself again. While I was getting ready to leave my dressing room that night, a tall, thin guy with a sour-looking face came in and tagged me on the shoulder.
Hello, Michaels.
Who are you?
I'm Jackson, the athletic commissioner. I was watching you. There was some mighty funny business going on. You deliberately dropped your guard and let Donovan in. Yes, Michaels, you threw that fight. I saw it. And I think that's going to finish you with a ring. Finish you for good.
Match starred Jackie Cooper. Listen again soon for another of your favorite motion picture stars in a drama of the unexpected. This program was transcribed in Hollywood.
That's going to do it for the Relic Radio Show this week, but the old-time radio continues. Tomorrow we'll hear a new episode of Case Closed, featuring the adventures of Sam Spade and Rocky Jordan. We'll also have a new horror replay with something from The Witch's Tale. That'll be tomorrow, but in the meantime, RelicRadio.com's got links to more old-time radio to keep you listening through the day. You'll also find links there to our forum, our blog, listener community, live stream, everything else we have going on is all found at RelicRadio.com. You can email me, RelicRadio@gmail.com. Thanks for joining me today. I'll be back next Tuesday with another episode of the Relic Radio Show.